Hi, I'm Art Kleiner, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Strategy and Business. In this podcast, we focus on a particular type of high-potential talent, people who turn ideas into major new enterprises. Some of them are better known as self-made billionaires. In the course of making their fortunes, they often overcome challenges that overwhelm other business leaders, and they make it all look easy. But there's also something they can't do. They need people around them who can perform in the conventional way. That's the secret message of high potential leadership. You need both producers and performers on your team. 3 years ago, John Sfiocla and Mitch Cohen set out to conduct the first systematic study of self-made billionaires, people who didn't inherit enormous wealth, but who created it. John is the director of global thought leadership at PwC, and Mitch is a PwC vice chairman. Their goal was to find out how these extreme entrepreneurs create and grow their businesses and what established companies can learn from them. You'll hear S&B contributing writer Laura Starita, who worked with John and Mitch on their book, The Self-Made Billionaire Effect, talk in depth with them about high potential talent, what it is, and how to get the most from it.
What is a high potential employee?
A high potential employee is an employee that you think can produce at a level that's beyond what you would expect from the vast majority of your other employees.
What do they look like? What qualities do they have?
They all look a little bit different. They come in all shapes and sizes, if you will. But they typically have a track record of doing some things out of the norm. And they're typically strong, very often strong performers, but they've often had different kinds of experiences that may set them apart. They may have taken a leave of absence and done something different in a different business. They may have traveled more. They may have done the kinds of things that begins to differentiate themselves and maybe expands their mind in a way that provides them with a base of knowledge that allows them to maybe see the world in a different way.
I used to think about hypos more as the kind of thing you hear often from corporations, which are people who have shown an ability to run different parts of the business. And you might think that it's a big kind of set of check boxes. Okay, they've been overseas, they've been a general manager, they've been in a staff function, they understand finance and so forth. And so I kind of think of it as a long set of check boxes, and they've done really well in each of those. And you might get actually blown out of the whole hypo process by missing one of those check boxes. I had a friend who was at a large conglomerate, and he was told by the CEO, hey, look, you missed 2 years worth of earnings. You were running a division. Sorry, you're not in the running to be CEO. There's 30 other candidates over the next whatever years. We'll keep you around and have you run a business, but you're never going to be CEO, that kind of a thing. Actually, in conversations with Mitch, I've started to think about it differently. You actually have two categories of hypos. You've got the performer, which I think is the check the box stuff, and then you have producers. And the producers are the folks who have grown something new for the business. They've figured how to get something done in a way that's never been done before. Mitch and I are both aware of a producer who wanted to change the context of the organization he was in. And instead of simply running the business better, he actually came up with a whole set of strategies and partnerships. He bought some companies. He went outside to different organizations. He changed the context of the conversation, the ownership structure, I mean, the whole routine. And so his vision was much broader than just running the organization well and making everybody happy who was in it. And so I think that as you look inside the organization, often you have these people. They've done something, I think of it as hotwiring the organization. They've done something the organization is not typically meant to do. And what we often do with those people is we pick them up and put them in quote unquote a real job. And I think that that turns them into performers when they have producer potential. And so I really think there's two big categories, at least in our mind, about what hypo means nowadays.
John, I'd also add, at least in my own mind, when we're evaluating who has high potential, one of the things I always try and look for are people who run to the fire, run to the tough assignment, put their hand up and in their own way take a certain level of risk and try something, that tough assignment that maybe nobody wants. And that to me is always an indication that they have that potential to run out and take on that new business down the road, or take on a new client that may be really challenging, or develop a new service within our firm.
You know, in our culture, I mean, in our corporate culture, we have this kind of myth of the individual mentality, right? That if you are successful, it's because you have this inherent set of gifts that you either were born with or developed over time. And the translation of that into when you're talking about a high potential candidate is let's just say you take somebody who shows and exhibits this ability to get some stuff done, and you put them in the next big challenge, and things fall apart. We tend to look at that person and say, oh, well, maybe they just weren't as good as we thought. How true do you think that is versus how often do you think the organization puts people in a position and then put them in the wrong job for them with the given the tools that they have or the resources that they have?
I think it really varies organization to organization. I think it varies from leader to leader as to how they deal with it. I used to work for our senior partner, Sam DiPiazza, and I asked him a very similar question about developing talent. And he said, I always wanted to be the kind of leader that, you know, took somebody, put them in the boat, took them deep out into the ocean, threw them out there and saw how they swam. He said, most times I find they can really swim really well and they make it to the next island, and then we give them their next assignment and throw them out there and they swim to the next island after that. Occasionally they fail and we bring them back on the boat, we dry them off, we give them some coaching, and then we throw them out there again and see how they do. And he said, that's how we find out who are those people who can really succeed.
I've read a couple of examples of companies whose management practice is to set an extreme challenge for a person, a challenge that that person cannot be successful at by just following business as usual or by just kind of trimming off on the edges. And by taking that approach of setting an extreme challenge and seeing how a person faces it, it sort of tests the mettle and also allows people to stretch themselves. Swimming the islands, do you throw people in the water if you're pretty sure they don't know how to swim? Or how do you make sure, how do you test that they can swim first?
Well, I think you make some judgment calls up front related to those performers, and you may have identified somebody as that high potential person. You say, boy, if I have to pick somebody to throw that person in the water, the odds are better with this person than that person. So I've heard that same thing about testing people, and I think that's a model that works. But people have to be willing, you have to have the right leaders who you know have your back, that if you fail at that your career isn't over, that you get another shot at doing that, that you get the right kind of training, that maybe you get repositioned in a different way. Because otherwise, people are saying, you know what, I'm going to stay on the boat right now, I'm going to ride it out as far as I can, and I'm going to have a pretty successful career. And you won't identify those kind of people who might have that potential to really excel and swim from one island to the next island. But you need to have that leadership support at an individual basis.
Yeah, the funny thing about talent is that I think a lot of CEOs get caught in the notion that on average their talent has to be great. We're making the argument, basically, it has nothing to do with the averages. You know, you pick a couple winners, that's a really good day. Because one of the beautiful things about the capitalist system is that it allows for outliers and it celebrates outliers. So if you get the right team on the right idea in the right business, we're not talking about incrementally more value. We're talking about billions of dollars more value. And I think that CEOs often get weighed down in getting involved in a bunch of the senior talent as opposed to figuring out, okay, how do I only think about that breakthrough talent?
I also think one of the shifts we're starting to see regarding talent, you know, when you look at the millennials who are coming through various organizations, the model that has worked for so many years, and especially large companies, that you came out of college, you joined a company, and you stayed there 35, 40 years, is not a model that is consistent with what this generation looks like. So I think companies are going to have to get more comfortable in identifying not only talent in their organization, but looking for talent outside their organization to bring in. I actually think it's a great opportunity for companies to differentiate themselves and to really jumpstart a lot of these things. There's various ways to get this talent in your organization. One is through acquisition, one is through catalyst hires, one is through development, and I think that's one of the things that companies need to think about in a different way.
One trend we're starting to see is that for those folks who have been successful in the past 10, 20 years, you're seeing people having second careers. And so you're having independently wealthy people come back into organizations and do new things just because they want to build something. I think that's a powerful new resource because, you know, they don't really need the company, but they are very committed to build something new. And I don't think that's a resource that a lot of companies have thought a lot about. And the tax is, and this is a significant tax when you're running a big organization, is that you're going to have to listen to those independent people. You know, there's an old saying in the art world that there are plenty of people who would like an Andy Warhol on their wall, but very few people who would like Andy Warhol in their living room. And it's the same thing here. You want the result of the entrepreneurship, of the producer mentality, but you have to listen to these people because if they believe in an idea, they are going to push it and they're going to figure 16 ways by Sunday to get it done. And if you're a leader, that can be a tax on you. But that tax delivers tremendous value.
Yeah. I think, John, this whole aspect of people circling back into organizations is an important one. And I go back to demographics again. We talked about the millennials. But then you have, with an aging population and people living longer and having longer careers, there's real potential to do that. And I think you're going to see companies do that more and more. And it has to be the type of company that makes it appealing for those individuals, because in many cases they don't have the financial need. But they want to do something. They want to have an impact. So I think companies have an opportunity to attract those kinds of people.
So there's a pet peeve of mine that's driving me crazy, okay? There's a bunch of tautological thinking that's out in management. So when you talk about blue ocean strategy, core competencies of the corporation, all that other stuff, people say, oh, we should stick to our knitting and only do those things that we're really good at. Well, our research would show that every one of these billionaires created a competency that they didn't have before they began. So they actually dive into, in 80% of the cases, highly contested markets and come up with something new, but create a capability or a competency that they didn't have before the fact. It's easy after the fact, once you're successful, to see the coherence, but on a go-forward basis, you need somebody like a great architect does with a blank sheet of paper to really create that design that works once it's implemented.
If one or two people are producing a ton of value, and everybody else in the organization is still doing a critical job that's necessary in order to continue to run the parts of the business that are traditional and that are historical. Mm-hmm. But is there not this potential dynamic where people who are in the not exciting, enormously value-creating parts feel undermined or underappreciated, or that the work that they've been doing isn't as valued as they feel like their contribution should be?
Well, I think the job of leadership is always to help create meaning in an organization. And it is true that large organizations need lots of people to do lots of different things. And there are lots of reasons people come to work. But usually, in great organizations, people have some sense of purpose, and they can have sight line from what they do every day to that sense of purpose. And it's the job of a leader to reinforce that meaning.
John, Your point about meaning and purpose is really spot on. And there's been a lot written recently about, especially young people coming into the organization, that they want to know how they fit. They want to know the impact that they're having. And it is the job of a leader and an entire leadership organization to instill that in everybody so that they understand how they fit in achieving the organization's overall goals. There's a famous story back in the 60s in Houston, and we're at NASA, where they asked a janitor one day, so what do you do here? And he said, I'm helping put a man on the moon. And that was, you know, he had a job to do, but part of that was helping put a man on the moon, and that's how he felt about it. And I've heard that from a number of top leaders in the world, and that from that janitor, from the receptionist, that everybody plays a role in the bigger goal.
So maybe we're not really talking about high potentials, but we're talking about how you define the role for somebody, for anybody who's doing a job within an organization. And that one of the core challenges is for an organization is having a mission and a focus and a sense of purpose that they can then translate for everybody, not just the ones who they're expecting to create billion-dollar businesses.
Yeah, it's one of the important things that has come up a lot we did not want to leave the impression that if you're a performer, there's something, you know, inherently bad about being a performer. No, it's quite the contrary. You need the performers to succeed in an organization, and that it's that pairing and having everybody play the right position that's the key for that organization to work well, whether you use the analogy of a football team or an orchestra. Everybody's got to be in the right spot doing the right thing. And if people are out of position, they're not going to be comfortable. The company isn't going to be successful. And I think that's one of the jobs of leaders, is to make sure that everybody's playing the right role and being developed maybe for that next role if they have that potential.
One of the things we do see is in the more sophisticated organizations, they have clever ways to deal with leadership challenges. So, for example, one of the great leadership challenges is, how do I differentially pay people who are better without breaking apart the social fabric? Well, you look at what Google's doing now. They have those multi-million dollar bonuses, and they've gotten that to work, where they just say, okay, if you do something extraordinary, we'll give you that. If you look at private equity firms, they give different kinds of incentive structures, so you have opportunities to buy into deals. You have opportunities to play a role on the board. You have opportunities to play roles in the different private equity companies. So if you're an unbelievable performer, you can have four or five or six different roles that you're getting paid for, and you could be sitting next to another person who only has one or two roles. But because you've had the opportunity to invest, and you've made that investment yourself, there's a social justice there that allows for widely different pay in the same organization. Then I think there's a notion of variety and challenges to the core model. You know, there are, if you look at companies like Pixar, one of the things that Ed Catmull did when he came back in and reinvigorated Disney Imagineering is that he reinstituted the notion that anybody in the organization can talk about how to make the story better. Because if there's a problem with a scene, and you know, you're near the end of a movie, that's a really big problem. But they have a whole process to raise those, to judge them, and to execute quickly on them. Well, that is the kind of variety that a producer can bring to bear in an organization. So I think that the sophisticated organizations are very, very clever about the way they deal with compensation without breaking justice, and variety without breaking purpose.
If all producers, or most producers by definition, are high potentials, are all producers by definition becoming uber successful or self-made billionaires? And do I have a guaranteed home run by grabbing that person and putting them into it?
No, it's not quite that simple. There's no
guarantee.
I think what we've talked about with companies is that by identifying these people and putting them in the right position, you're increasing your odds of being successful and hitting that home run. It's not a guarantee, but I can tell you, if you don't consciously do it right now, you do go back to the point of luck. You might get lucky along the way and have somebody who's that Uber person who stays with you and rides it all out. But if you do this consciously, you can exponentially improve your odds of getting that big idea and plowing it through your organization.